WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. It's Tsipras. That's the Prime Minister. Alexis Tsipras. It's a it's your typical silent T in the Greek language at the beginning of names. So highlights, lowlights for the week. Welcome to Money Matters, by the way. We already gone over a couple lowlights. We've got Greece. They have a 4-month extension in their debt talks with what used to be called the Troika, which is the three. Now it's called the, so creatively named now, it's called the three institutions: the European Central Bank, the IMF, International Monetary Fund, and then the EU. It's really Germany versus Greece, because the economic power in the Eurozone is obviously Germany. So they're the ones that kind of lead the charge, whether the Greeks or the Greek banks get a bailout, well, continue to be funded on the bailout that they, remember, this is a long bailout history with Greece. So it started in 2010, and then it kind of continued to unfold over several years, and then they got a huge bailout. But then they're trying to back away from some of the austerity measures that they were supposed to do in order to continue to receive the money. And Germany doesn't like it. So they had a new political party. They have a new political party in Greece, and they wanted to unravel some of those things. Germany said no. They finally came to an agreement this past Friday. And now there's another 4-month postponement, or lifeline, if you will, so that Greece will stay in the Eurozone and their banks won't default, at least not today or over the next couple of months. So that's kind of a low light of the week, this continued saga and drama of a highly indebted nation, a great example of what not to do on whether you're a country, a family, or a company at any stage at all. We'll, by the way, welcome to Money Matters. It's 44 degrees here on this foggy, still foggy out there, rainy, foggy day. Thanks for being with us. We're here every Sunday morning from 9 to 11. So in the 10 o'clock hour, of course, we'll talk highlights, lowlights. I have a couple of areas that I want to talk to you about as far as some of the mechanics of making money over time. Talk about how the pie gets bigger and why that's important when it comes to just straight population growth around the world, or demographics, and why that underlying tailwind is so important for us to understand as investors to begin with. But also, we'll take your calls and questions. So your calls and questions, that's the really fun part of Money Matters. That's where things get interesting. I don't know what you're going to ask me when you call. It very much is a live money show on the weekends. It keeps things very interesting. If you have a question about something, anything, when it relates back to your money, or let's say it's either finances, investments, retirement planning, 401k at work, TSP plan at if you work for the government, if it is a question about real estate or a house or a mortgage or what you can generate from just cash sitting around doing nothing, sitting in bank accounts because interest rates are at historic lows, whether you should take a pension or not, whether you have an insurance-related question to long-term care, it's Medicare, and I'm just kind of thinking through all the questions that I get on a daily basis when it's just one-on-one, and I'm talking to talking to families about how to help them with their finances. These are just, I'm just rapid firing through the concerns that people have, and people want to have questions that people have questions about. So if you're thinking about it, chances are somebody else is too. So we're here on Sunday mornings to talk that through with you and give you as objective of opinion as humanly possible. And that's why we get up on Sunday mornings to come in here to the studio and we're here with WSB. So the number here in the studio, phone lines are open for the 10 o'clock hour, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750. Or you can call us toll-free, 1-800-WSB-TALK. So with that, we've gone over some of the lowlights of the week. Earnings estimates coming down. Robert Shiller, here's another lowlight of the week. He is the father of the Case Shiller, or one of the fathers, so the Case-Shiller Home Price Index. That's the index that we watch every single month to see nationally, whether there's a 10-city index, a 20-city index, to see what real estate prices are doing. Of course, real estate is hyper local, so it doesn't necessarily mean or relate exactly to what's happening on your street or your neighborhood, but it certainly gives us an overall trend in America. So the Case-Shiller Home Price Index is an important thought, and he's a respected economist. So he's starting to buy international stocks. This week, he said that he's selling you some of his U.S. He's buying international stocks. He's buying Spain. He's buying Italy. And then his measure of the price-to-earnings ratio, it's a 10-year rolling average of earnings. So it's called the CAPE ratio. It's the current prices for the Standard & Poor's versus the index's average inflation-adjusted earnings over the last 10 years. It's a little pricey today, says Shiller. So again, it's a very crude measure, very generalized measure of market valuation. So it's not something that gets me worried just yet, but it's interesting at least to take keep an eye on. By the way, well, let's continue. Let's talk a little bit about, let's at least do some good news for the week. So by the way, the market was up. So part of the Greek deal getting done on Friday, late in the day on Friday trading, we saw the market rally about 120 points. Remember, 100 points isn't what it used to be on a Dow that's now basically 18,000. So we see markets up for the week about 0.6% on the Dow and the S&P 500. So a good week for markets. Apple continues to make waves and make news. So this is one of my highlights of the week. Apple plans to begin production of an electric car. An electric car! Haven't they already dominated the rest of the world? And this is supposed to happen so in the year 2020. So 5 years from now, they're going to start producing, I don't know if it's going to be called an I, I'm sure it's going to be an I car or something like that. So pretty amazing that they continue to go forth and try to conquer every single industry segment. And who knows what they'll do next. But Apple earnings are expected to jump 32% this year. So at least you're going to get a bunch of that, most of that from the iPhone 6 and the new watch that's coming out. This is pretty amazing to me. Apple only 15, and this is what gives me a little bit of hope as far as them being able to continue to grow their earnings, even though they're this gargantuan $700 billion company. So you get to be that big, it's really difficult to continue to have high percentage growth rates. It's just the law of large numbers. Once you've already dominated one area, it's hard to continue to grow at 20% a year. But this is kind of interesting. Take a look at your iPhone. I bet you 9 out of 10 of you don't have, if you have an iPhone, you're thinking, what kind of iPhone do I have? I bet you don't have the iPhone 6. And I say that because only 15%, so 8.5 people out of 10, do not have the new iPhone 6, and they haven't upgraded to the iPhone 6. And again, if you think about it, how many of those new iPhones have you really seen? Not that many. I still have my 5. Ryan still has his 5. I've only seen one or two of these iPhone 6s. I'm sure you've seen one, and maybe you're saying, hey, Wes, I have one. But most people don't. And the iPhone universe is gargantuan. So there's a huge number of people still have not upgraded their iPhones. And the iPhone business is enormous for Apple. So kind of an interesting thought that they've got a lot of runway left with just getting upgraded to iPhone 6. And of course, they've got to come out with probably an iPhone 6S and the next iteration of that. So there's plenty of upgrade cycle left. Plus the new Apple Watch next year. $23 billion expected revenue, even though that's as large as some countries' GDP, it's not going to move the meter all that much because Apple is already gargantuan. Interesting, though, look for this fall, Apple is going to have a new set-top box. According to Gene Munster, Piper Jaffray, Apple TV this fall will come, there'll be a new set-top box, which could eventually pave the way for the whole Apple television that we continue to look for and still haven't seen just yet. I'm not talking about the Apple TV, the little black box that's really an internet portal, but I'm talking about an actual television set. A lot of good calls on hold here. Where should I go here, Ryan? Where are you telling me to go? We're going to Ann in Lawrenceville. Welcome to Money Matters, Ann. How can we help?
Yes, we're thinking about moving and buying a new home.
What? And, why would you do that, Ann?
Well, It's time to.
Fair enough. I can't come back from that response. So where are you moving to? What's the house value today versus what you're selling it for versus the new place? Are you downsizing a little bit? What's the story, Ann?
We're not really downsizing. We have a home. It's paid for. The value of the home is probably worth $100 more than what we paid for it.
All right. Got it.
We would be moving to a more expensive home, but we could pay, you know, cash for it with upon the sale of our house.
Ah, okay.
It would take a lot of our money, of our savings.
Hold on here. Let's just get round numbers here. You don't even have to tell me the value of the house. Let's just say it's $300,000 you're selling it for, and that you're buying a new house for about, you said a little bit more than that or about the same?
More.
Is it, you said 100 more?
No, the value of our home is probably increased.
Oh, okay. Well, here's my question. What, and we're going to probably have to go to a quick break and we'll come back and answer this. There's two parameters I have for you, Ann. One, there's a really important rule of thumb when it comes to what you're going to be spending out of your liquid cash flow. And there's a certain percentage of that you don't want to go over, because then you get house rich, cash poor, and you can't pay for groceries with shingles off the roof, right? So we've got to look at that ratio, and then we'll look at it, whether you need to finance some of this or not finance some of it, and the advantage or disadvantage between the two. So that's coming up. So Ann, hang on with me for a second. Quick news, weather, traffic, folks, and then we'll answer Ann's real estate question about should she pay cash or get a mortgage for the new home purchase. Straight ahead, news, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. We're back on the line with Ann, who, Ann's got this question about whether she pays cash for a place or not. So Ann, you're going to sell your current home for, you're going to net out about 100, correct?
Yes.
And then you're going to buy a place that is, what, close to how much, 400?
Yes.
So your question is, gosh, you've got this 100, but you would have to use another 300 from all of your other assets. Here's what I think a really important rule of thumb. You do not want to spend. So you got to think of it, two buckets. You've got your retirement money bucket, IRAs, 401ks, anything that's quote unquote retirement money, and then non-retirement money. There's just those two main categories. You do not want to spend. You think about your after-tax money. You don't want to spend more than a third of that on the house as far as utilizing that cash. So that means if you have $300,000 in after-tax money, the most you want to use from that, Ann, is $100,000. It's a third of $300. So that would mean you take $100 from the net proceeds of the home, $100 from your cash, that's $200. And if the mortgage is $400, that means you're going to have approximately a $200,000 mortgage. Now, with rates as low as they are, they've ticked up a little bit, it looks like. But according to Bankrate, the 30-year fixed mortgage right now looks like, let's see here, 30-year fixed refi is 4.04%. Last week it was 3.88. So let's just call it, and a 15 is a little closer to 3.25. So you're going to get a great mortgage rate. Rates are still really low, so you can finance that 200 extra. But Ann, and anybody else out there thinking about this important question, it's tough to find houses right now. So I think that it wasn't that long ago where it was really difficult to sell your house. And I said, sell your house first. You can always find a place. Today, inventory is pretty limited. And if you're shopping for a house, it might take you longer than you think to find the right place. So be careful about selling your home too quickly. Otherwise, you're going to be in a rental before you find a place. And I don't think you want to be in a rental for a couple of months. It's a short term. It's expensive. So really think through the sale and the buy before you pull the trigger on either, and stick to the 1/3 rule as far as how much money you want to put down. Sounds like Ann can do a big chunk of this, but she has to be careful not to spend too much of her liquid funds. You're listening to Money Matters. We'll be back. News, weather, traffic straight ahead, then more of your calls and questions here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Well, good morning. Welcome back to a foggy, kind of rainy Sunday here. 45 degrees here on Peachtree Street, and welcome to Money Matters. A lot of good calls and questions today. We'll continue to go to the phones. I'm your host, Wes Moss. If you want to tweet me or do something like that, let's see, where would that go to? That would go to at WesMoss365, WESMOSS365. Let's see. I haven't said anything about Twitter today. I don't even know if I have any Twitter questions. Let me check. We usually get some good Twitter questions throughout the day. So if you have questions, tweet me at WesMoss365. Oh, I do have some. We'll do these. MLPI, SJNK, still appropriate for the income bucket. Please comment. Ooh, you know what? I will comment. I'll comment right now. So who is this coming from? At Robert_Lyle, something like that. So there are a couple of ETFs that this question is about. The two of them are very much about the sector they are within. One of them is a junk bond ETF, SJNK, and another is MLPI, which is a master limited partnership pipeline company basket of stocks as well. It's actually an ETN, exchange traded note, but it works just like an ETF. So if you look at SJNK, The yield on SJNK, these are short-term junk bonds. It has a 5.5% yield. That's what you, if you buy it today, you're going to get 5.5% a year if the ETF price stays perfectly flat. That's in general what you're going to average, at least for your income. Now, the price, of course, can go up a bunch. It could go down a bunch, but these are short-term high yield bonds. This is kind of an interesting thought that we've talked a lot about this year. Ryan and I, me and the Money Matters team, we've had a lot of conversations around where interest rates are going to rise. Remember, the fixed income market, the bond market, the market that we're worried about as far as rates going up or down or sideways, is a $35, $40 trillion market. So think of stocks as a $20 trillion market, think of bonds as a $40 trillion market. They're just gigantic. So you've got all these iterations, government bonds that pay very little, they're very safe, corporate bonds that are safe, they pay a little bit, high yield bonds that have terrible credit or bad credit. Doesn't mean they're going out of business tomorrow, but just means that they have less than perfect balance sheets. They're leveraged, they've got a lot of debt. So if things go wrong in the business plan side of things, they could end up defaulting. And then you get 20 cents on the dollar back on your original investment. Yes, why would you buy that to begin with? Well, you buy or own high yield bonds because you get compensated for that risk, at least you're supposed to. And if the 10-year treasury pays 2 and a high yield bond ETF pays 5.5 or 6, you're getting more income out of a high yield bond. Yes, you're taking on more risk, but to some extent, you're getting compensated for that. If you can own high-yield bonds in a really diversified manner, and you own them in an ETF where there are 200 or 300 different bond positions, yes, some of them will not be able to pay interest, and they will go technically bankrupt. But if one or two or three out of 300 that happens to, then it doesn't mean that you're going to lose everything. And that's why owning high yield bonds in an ETF or a mutual fund, that makes so much sense. So that's the first thought here. The second thought is that where are rates going to rise? We know that short-term rates, we think that the Federal Reserve is going to raise rates probably this June, sometime this summer. That means that 0% short-term rate today will probably go up to 0.25% and then could go up to 0.5% by the end of the year. So it's really short-term rates that are probably going to go up, which would impact a really short-term junk bond ETF, because remember, interest rates go up, bond prices come down. It's an inverse relationship. It's like a seesaw. Rates go up, prices go down. Now, with really short-term bonds, there's not nearly as much price volatility because they're short-term by nature, meaning that they should mature very soon at par value, a year, 2, 3 years. But because that's the part of the bond market that where rates are likely going to rise the most, then you've got to be careful here with a high yield bond that's really quote unquote short term. So my thought here, and again, this is very difficult to predict where interest rates are going to rise. They'll probably rise on the shorter end, which means you probably don't want to own something like SJNK, where I would probably be more in favor of a more intermediate term high yield scenario. Take a look at the ETF HYG, which is a more intermediate term high yield bond ETF. So that's something to think about, and the reason I don't think intermediate term yields go up all that much is that they're, to some extent, they're anchored, because you've got interest rates. You go to Germany, you see the German 10-year bond is less than 0.5%. Our 10-year bond is over 2%. How does our 10-year bond rise to 3 when Germany's still at 0.5? I don't know if that makes a lot of sense. So I think you've got some anchoring going on with interest rates low around the world. As far as MLPI is concerned, those are pipeline companies. So think of big, well-known pipeline companies. Think of the Kinder Morgans of the world, which is technically not an MLP anymore, but a company like Kinder Morgan, a company like Energy Transfer Partners, a company like Plains All American. These are the big infrastructure pipeline companies around America that run pipes from Wyoming to Ohio and Texas to Louisiana. That's how crude oil, for the most part, gets moved around this country. They get to, the owners of those pipelines, they get to charge a rent or effectively a toll for big oil companies moving that commodity. And that's why they have really steady cash flow. So I think that the prices were up 25% back in 2014 because oil prices crashed. So did prices in these MLPs. Not all of them, but many of the MLPs came back down to kind of a flatline scenario. I think they're still fine to look at if you are a really income-oriented investor. So I wouldn't be giving up on MLPs just yet. And I have to sneeze here for a second, so that's part of it. I might have to sneeze. I might have to go to off mic for a second. All right, let's go to the phones here. 404-872-0750. Great question, by the way, via Twitter, at WesMoss365 on Twitter. And the phone number, 404-872-0750. Ryan, we're headed to Scott, who joins us from Douglasville. Good morning, Scott. How can we help?
Hi, Wes. Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I've got a self-directed IRA I've had for 25 years, and basically I've invested in large stocks, and over time they've become more dividend paying, and I've bought more stuff that paid more, but I've always used my dividends to buy more stuff. It's at 55, is it a good time to start rolling those dividends back into the dividend paying, or continue to take the dividends and enlarge the portfolio?
So Scott, let me just clarify here exactly your question. There's two ways to do this, obviously. You're going to get a dividend no matter what if you own, let's say, Johnson & Johnson. So you're going to get the dividend. It can either automatically buy new shares of J&J, or it can go into the money market, and you then can decide where you reinvest it. For now, you say you've been just doing auto dividend reinvest, going back into the same stocks or mutual funds that you own?
No, just the opposite of that. I've been keeping the cash and buying other securities.
See, that's the way I like to do it. I don't know if there's a right or wrong way, Scott. I especially if you're in accumulation phase, meaning before age 60, I think that either works really well. I think the auto reinvest option is great because you never have a second to spare. Your money immediately goes back into the same investment. It keeps working. On the other hand, the way I do it is the way you do it. I like to see those dividends and interest go into the money market. Then I can choose where to reinvest it. The most valuable areas or most undervalued areas at the time. And that also helps you continue to maintain a balance in your overall investment. So I would continue to do it the way you're doing it, because I think when you get to 62 or you stop working, you start living off your dividends and your interest, you definitely don't want to be on dividend reinvest at that point.
Right.
So I think if you're at 55, you're a couple of years away from wanting to be on non-dividend reinvest anyway, because you're going to start using the money. So I'd absolutely keep it the way you're doing it for now.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Scott, have a great rest of your Sunday. 404-872-0750 is the number here in the studio. We'll go to Chuck, who joins us from Canton. Chuck, good morning. How can we help?
Good morning, Wes. Listen, I've got a Roth IRA I inherited from my wife, but because the beneficiary was not titled properly, I fell into that five-year rule where I have to zero it out in 5 years.
Oh.
Okay. Now, that's water under the bridge. Okay, I have to do this. Now, here's what I'm thinking. I want to pass that my wife's financial legacy onto my children, my adult children. And what I'm planning on doing is taking out $5,500 each for the three children each year, giving it to writing a check to them and say, okay, the condition is you fund your own Roth IRA and do this year after year until that my wife's Roth IRA is depleted. Am I missing something here?
The only catch for you, Chuck, is to make sure the kids are all, they're all working.
Yes. They're 50, 49, and 47.
And they all, nobody stay at home. Everybody has an income.
That's right.
Okay. Well, even if you had someone, you can still have a Roth contribution, even if you're not working, if your spouse is working, so you can do a spousal Roth. So as long as there's income in the family above, now if they're 50, it's $6,500. If they're under 50, it's 55. But I love that. I love that strategy because if they're not doing it to begin with, then your that extra $5,500 or $6,500 for the year will be extremely helpful to them. So I think it's a really good strategy. I would just they have to understand that if they're already funding a Roth, they obviously can't do it twice. You've got that maximum limit per year.
Right, and they aren't. But we started, when Roth first came to being, we started the kids out and they all had jobs. And it was $2,000 at that time. We funded a Roth IRA for 2 years for each one of the three children. And then my wife and I retired, so we couldn't fund our own and we didn't fund theirs. But they started out with that, and now we're continuing. And I don't think they put anything else into it, but they're up to like $40,000 now for that $4,000 investment apiece.
See, it's just a wonderful power of time and compounding it. Well, I'm sorry for the loss, obviously, of your wife, but what a great legacy too to be able to pass that on to the kids in the most beneficial manner you can, and they'll certainly be able to use the money tax free when they're in their 60s and 70s. So I think it's a really wonderful idea, Chuck. So thank you for the call. 404-872-0750. We have a trivia WSB McDonald's Weekend prize pack and trivia question coming up straight ahead. News, weather, traffic, and more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. All right, Brian didn't use my trivia prize pack. U.S. consumers use how many gallons of gas per day? 370 million gallons of gas per day. That means we, with lower prices from 281 down to 227, we're spending $200 million less per day on gas. It goes somewhere. I don't know if it's going to Apple iPhones or going to Walmart or what. But Ryan, let's do trivia question. Prize pack.
The McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack is a family four-pack of tickets to the Gwinnett Gladiators versus the Florida Everblades on March 8th at the Arena at Gwinnett Center. A pair of tickets to the Bud Light Concert Series featuring Bryan Adams on April 17th at Verizon Wireless Amphitheater, produced by ASO Presents. This week's prize pack value, 300 bingos. The trivia question, we talked a lot about Apple today, since there's always something to cover with Apple. They have more than $170 billion in cash, which is enough to buy the 38 smallest companies in the S&P 500. Think about that. It's pretty unbelievable. They're the largest company in the world, but there was a company in 1999 that had a $616 billion market cap, a company that was almost as large as Apple is now. What company was that?
Wait, what are some of those examples of the 38, Ryan, you were telling me?
Yeah, so Apple's cash, they could purchase the 38 smallest companies. That includes Genworth Financial, Diamond Offshore, Transocean, Avon, GameStop, Urban Outfitters.
And the list keeps going. So they really could just become like a Berkshire. They could become a Berkshire Hathaway and have a conglomerate where they own everything from teen clothing to long-term care insurance to the new iCar. It's coming out starting in 2020, supposedly.
Figure out how to get the same margins on that iCar. It's going to be interesting.
404-741-0750, the prize line. We'll tweet out the answer, put it on Facebook. And with that, well, again, it's going to be a busy week. And as it always is, I'll be with Scott Slade in the mornings giving market updates on Atlanta Morning News throughout the week as we continue to do so. And with that, enjoy the rest of this foggy, rainy Sunday. If you want to find me in the Money Matters team, you go to WesMoss.com, WESMOSS.com. There's a big contact button. Send me your questions. We'll get back to you within 24, 48 hours. And with that, enjoy this Sunday and God bless.